When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The information depicted in this podcast is purely for informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional before making any changes to your lifestyle or routine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas, and I'm the founder of Ergogenic Health. Together in this podcast series, we will go underground to explore cutting-edge health and human performance insights that you simply cannot search on Google to help you upgrade your existence. So, without any further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Ladies and gents, welcome back to the Boost Your Biology podcast. Joining me in today is Christina Telhami. Christina, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I've been such a huge fan, so this really means a lot.
Awesome. So maybe, Christina, do you want to let my listeners know who you are and share a little bit about maybe your journey?
Yeah, so I'm currently a fourth-year pharmacy student. It's 4 years to get your PharmD, and I am definitely not into traditional medicine at all. I think it's funny that people think I'm really into pharmacy and conventional medicine, and again, I'm not opposed to conventional medicine, but I've started to steer towards more holistic and functional medicine, and I'm currently hoping to be a future functional medicine practitioner and currently going through functional medicine schooling. So that's just a little bit of a brief background.
Yeah. So maybe what was like the trigger point for you? Like what initially captured your interest in this sort of field?
So a few years ago, back in 2017, I finally decided to get my health together. I've had a lot of gut issues throughout high school, throughout college. I had amenorrhea for 8 years. And if people don't know what that is, I didn't have a period. And I finally was just tired of all the doctors trying to give me a pill. For all my stomach issues, they tried to give me a proton pump inhibitor or something that's called a PPI, if you guys are familiar with that. It's really just an acid suppressor to suppress your acid in the stomach. And then for my period, a doctor just gave me birth control pill, and I was on that to try to get a period, which is not a real period. It's actually just synthetic hormones in your body mimicking your natural hormone production. So after struggling with all of this for years, I seeked out a holistic nutritionist, and instantly we got to the root cause of my gut issues. I found out I had candida overgrowth. We worked with my food, my lifestyle, my managing my stress. I immediately got my period back after 2 years of being off of birth control. So it took a really, really long time. But from then on, I knew that holistic medicine and getting to the root cause of your health issues is so much better than just giving a pill, a cream, or anything else to kind of mask those symptoms.
Mm. Yeah, one thing that I've heard quite a lot is
just sort of around the birth control pill and how they sort of use that to, I guess, treat like endometriosis, PCOS and things like that. So do you want to talk about what's their rationale behind that and how does that even work?
Yeah. So in pharmacy school, we're really taught about treatments, right? So when we kind of get into the endocrine class, we don't really dive deep into what actually is causing all of these issues, but rather just the treatment options. So for someone with PCOS, first line is the birth control pill. For someone with endometriosis, first line, birth control pill. So it's really frustrating because we aren't taught how diet and how lifestyle can actually drastically impact PCOS and endometriosis. Rather, we're just told to give them birth control pill. And it's frustrating because doctors actually tell you that it's a real period. When I got my birth control pill, I was worried, you know, I said, this isn't a real period. And the doctor said, no, no, you're actually getting your period monthly. It's a real period. I don't really understand how that rationale behind that, you know, where it's not a real period. We're literally given synthetic hormones.
Mm. What sort of advice in terms of from those listening in, perhaps maybe we might have some, you know, young women listening in who might be struggling with a similar issue. Like, where do you think they should start in terms of, you know, delving into sort of hormonal issues?
Yeah. So first off, it's hard for me to tell someone to just get off their medication because when you go off birth control, your hormones are going to be out of whack. Mm. But I really do suggest that those who are having some hormonal issues or gut issues, because birth control is actually not good for your gut microbiome. It really negatively impacts that. So I think it is important to first kind of get off birth control, but also seek a holistic nutritionist or functional medicine or integrative health practitioner who will honestly help you in balancing out your hormones, getting you off birth control pill, maybe running something called a Dutch test, which will help show you that estrogen and progesterone and even testosterone levels in your body, just to sort of see where everything is at.
Mm, awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Dutch test because I'm a huge fan of that test and I did it myself, I think like 2.5 years ago as part of my experiments. Just love to dive into my biology and things like that. So I guess maybe then, so let's sort of take a step back. And I know you've sort of mentioned gut health being a, you know, primary aspect that we as, you know, naturopathic doctors look at. So let's discuss, you know, gut health and how it's sort of linked in with reproductive balance and reproductive hormones.
Yeah. So your gut microbiome plays a huge role in your immune system, your metabolism, your mood, your memory, but also your hormones, especially when you're not having a daily bowel movement. So if you're someone who's having a bowel movement 1 to 2 times a week, that is not normal. Mm. You should be having a normal bowel movement 1 to 2 times a day, because if you're not having that bowel movement, you are having built up estrogen and built up toxins in your body. We need to be pooping daily to kind of poop out that extra estrogen that might be going, you know, because it goes from the liver to that bile. It's going to be secreted out of the body. So we really want to make sure that we are pooping daily. Your gut microbiome is a huge part in so many factors of your body, right? There's that gut-brain connection too. I think a lot of people forget about that. We're not even taught that in school. Mm. We're actually taught that probiotics aren't even beneficial. So just want to put that out there that your gut microbiome is key for overall health.
Mm. Yeah. And it's crazy to think that like some people regard like going to the toilet at like maybe once every 3 days as normal. So like, let's look into some other crazy things that people might think are normal that really just aren't normal.
Well, going to the bathroom multiple times a day. I know people who, like my brother, for instance, he's going to hate me that I said this, but like he runs to the bathroom sometimes right after he eats any meal. And that's really not normal. 1 to 2 times a day is pretty normal, but I think more than that, not really. I think people think that, you know, if any type of poop is okay 1 to 2 times a day, but you really want a formed solid poop. You know this is a little bit TMI, but it's really important that we really talk about what your poop actually looks like. It shouldn't be these droplets going in, right? It shouldn't be crazy amount of liquid coming out. It should be a nice formed stool.
Mm. Let's dive into, I guess, sort of like your stance on probiotics and prebiotics. Like what are your thoughts there?
Well, I think it's important to know what type of probiotic people should be taking. I think a lot of people say, okay, I need to get one that's in the fridge. But if you think about it, a probiotic, if it's supposed to be going into your body that's at 98 degrees Fahrenheit and your stomach that is extremely acidic, if it needs to be in the fridge to survive, how do you think it's going to make it down to your digestive tract? How do you think it's going to make it through your body? Your body temperature is much higher than a refrigerator, right? I mean, how did our ancestors and people in the ancient history get their probiotics, right? They didn't have fridge accessible to them. But I also want to make sure that people know to be taking spore-based probiotics. These really will ensure that they're actually making it down to your GI tract. Not a lot of probiotics are going to even make it down there. I think taking any kind will be beneficial at all, but you want to make sure that all of that that good gut bacteria is actually making it into your digestive system.
Awesome. What about bloating? Is that considered, I mean, some people consider that normal. Like, is that normal?
So chronic bloat is not normal. I, of course, occasionally get bloated. Honestly, after a workout, sometimes I'm a little bit bloated. That's normal. Your body was under a lot of stress. You know, maybe you have some bloat at the end of the day. Totally normal. But if you're someone who eats anything, and I mean literally a vegetable and you're bloated, probably means something's underlying. If you're chronically bloated all the time, something is definitely underlying. So that's kind of why it's important to do a gut microbiome comprehensive stool test to really look at what good gut bacteria do you have? What bad bacteria do you have? You know, do I have an overgrowth of yeast? Do I have a parasite? Do I have a virus I don't know about? Is my pancreas working functionally, right? So all of these things play a key role in your gut.
Mm. You know, one area that I've sort of neglected quite a lot is parasitic overgrowth and things like that. So just share with my listeners what you know about, you know, parasites and how we can, I guess, attack them or target them.
Well, I think the best thing to do is to be washing your fruits and vegetables because a lot of parasites might be living in there. So definitely just making sure that you are also eating the clean 15 and the dirty dozen list. So the dirty dozen list are the 12 vegetables that are, or fruit that are most sprayed with pesticides throughout that year. So if you are not able to afford organic, it is totally okay, but really make sure that whatever's on that dirty dozen list to make sure that you are buying organic. And then whatever's on the clean 15 could be those organic produce or those produce that you don't need to be buying organic because they're going to have the least amount of pesticides or anything like that sprayed on them. So really making sure that you're washing your fruits and veggies, making sure that you're drinking clean, filtered water. I think a lot of people really neglect the filtered water, but drinking a good filtered water is important to be making sure we're not getting any weird bugs in our bodies.
I'm actually sipping on some Zazen filtered water as we record this.
Wait, what's that?
It's sort of like a basic water filter. It adds back in a few minerals with the rocks down the bottom. It's nothing fancy. It could be a lot better, but I think it does a job.
I'm gonna look into that.
Yeah. I guess we can sort of transition over into something that you're quite passionate about, and that's sort of like mental health and body image. You want to sort of dive into that a little bit more?
Yeah, so something a lot of people really don't know about me, and especially my college friends, was that I really struggled with a lot of mental health issues. You know, I went to San Diego State, and if you're in America and you know what San Diego State is, it's a really big party school. Everyone there is just drop dead gorgeous, really good looking, but it really messed with my mental health. I really just struggled with the way I looked. I would spend hours and hours in the gym, which really contributed to a lot more of my health issues. You know, my period issues were not getting better. My gut issues were not getting better. I was under chronic stress. So I really took some time to realize that body image isn't all that matters. It's really how you feel. And you can be looking really thin, really beautiful on the outside, but your internal health is what's most important.
Yeah, I guess a big factor there is like obviously social media playing a huge role, body image. I think it's definitely the same. I'm speaking on behalf of men, like for sure, even myself with like that sort of Superman, superhero look, that's definitely something that I personally strive towards. And obviously it can be, it can sort of get out of hand, you know, if you know, with sort of certain practices, I guess, like to actually achieve that physique, or let's say to achieve that skinny look, that's what can lead to what's known as that female athlete triad. Is it like the loss of the reproductive, what's that sort of condition?
I actually don't know exactly, but I know that's something that can happen if you are overworking your body and you don't have a period. I actually don't know the details of that, but I definitely know what that is. I'm not familiar with everything on it, honestly.
Hmm. So I guess from a dietary perspective, do you want to sort of share, like, what's your stance on, like, something that's trending at the moment is the carnivore diet. So I'd love to hear, like, your thoughts there.
So I love meat, so I'm going to put that out there. I will never be vegan just because personally meat is so healthy. And I know with vegan diets, I went vegan in college and it really messed up with my hormones. So I would say that as much as I love meat, I don't think that everyone should be doing the carnivore diet. I think men and women are completely different people, right? We have completely different hormones. A lot of the trending diets like carnivore, like keto, a lot of them are really tailored more towards men, right? Men are the ones really talking about it. Men are the one who are, you know, doing the carnivore diet and sharing everything. But women, we really do need those carbohydrates for our hormones. If we are putting our body under a lot of stress, like your diet, if your diet is causing a lot of stress on your body, it's going to raise that cortisol and then therefore disrupt the rest of your hormone, right? So it is important that as a woman, we are getting all the macronutrients because our hormones will love us for it. I remember that I actually went kind of low carb to heal some gut issues. I had candida overgrowth. And if you guys don't know what candida overgrowth is, you actually do have some candida in your body. But when it becomes overgrowth, when there's an overgrowth of it in your gut microbiome, you can have chronic UTIs, chronic yeast infections, you know, tons of bloating, constipation, all the things I dealt with. And so I had to go a little bit lower carb because this yeast, it loves to feed off of sugars, right? And so I really wasn't able to actually get my period back until I started eating more carbohydrates. And I remember after 2 months of eating carbohydrates, once I healed my candida, I immediately got my period back because my body wasn't under stress anymore. It was under a lot of stress when I was depleting literally all carbohydrates except for greens and maybe some non-starchy veggies, but it wasn't enough carbohydrates for my body, you know, especially on top of exercising, lifting weights, your body needs that glucose.
Yeah. Well explained. Actually with the candida, this sort of jogs my memory back to second year university when we sort of looked into herbal therapies, antimicrobials, and sort of some of those anti-parasitic herbs and things like that. What were your go-to, I guess, like anti-candida herbals?
Yeah, so I was on berberine, which is a really great natural antimicrobial, and that was kind of the main one that I used. And I also used oregano oil. I think a lot of people obviously know what oregano oil is, but I personally used oregano essential oil and made my own little capsules with that. So that is a great antimicrobial as well. Those are the two I used back in 2017, but I actually took a recent stool test and I found out that I was actually not sensitive to them, which means that they actually aren't working for my body anymore. And it could be just because I really use them a lot when I did have that infection or when I did have that overgrowth previously. So now my body just does not respond to berberine or oregano, which is insane.
It sort of sounds like antibiotic resistance.
It is exactly like antibiotic resistance, which is what we learn in school, that you can be resistant to a lot of antibiotics. And honestly, today, antibiotic resistance is completely growing. Doctors are continuously prescribing antibiotics for viral infections, right? Why are you taking an antibiotic for something that's viral and not bacterial? So keep it in mind if your doctor is trying to prescribe you antibiotics for, you know, something that's not a bacterial infection.
My dad's a pharmacist, and when I was younger, I thought I was really privileged because I always had access to like amoxicillin and some potent antibiotics. And anytime I'd catch a little cold, my dad's like, "Here you go," and I just literally get it on tap. And I was thinking that I was like super privileged, and I was like superior to all my classmates because I'm like, well, if I get sick, I got antibiotics to cover my back, sort of thing. And same with PPIs as well. was on, you know, Nexium from the age of 16, which is...
Me too, actually. And what's really crazy is that most of America is actually... We're quite the opposite. We actually have low stomach acid, not too much stomach acid. And what we learn in school is if you have GERD, if you have heartburn, you have too much stomach acid. And I remember my professor was teaching this. This is honestly insane. My professor was teaching this and I literally said, no, I raised my hand in class. I said, no, it's actually too little stomach acid. I would know because I've had the same issue. I took some HCL pills, put myself on HCL pills to get my stomach acid back up. And he really just like embarrassed me in front of the class and said I was wrong. So I sent him a long email with like 5 articles and he still told me that I was wrong.
Wow. Did you get suspended?
No, he just definitely was really upset at me and I don't think he liked me anymore. But, you know, I kind of just stopped speaking up for myself in class. I've kind of just been the person to just not say anything anymore because I get so frustrated. I mean, the diet stuff that we learn nothing about nutrition. When we had our diabetes class, when we taught about, you know, insulin, diabetes medications, you are taught a little bit about diet and like carbohydrates, things like that. But the diet that they recommend for patients with diabetes is honestly scary. It's literally still a bunch of processed carbohydrates, milk, low fat meat, you know, no eggs. How outdated is this information that we're being taught? These are the future doctors, right? Why are we still being taught outdated information when it's clearly been studied to counter it, you know?
What about the situation in hospitals? Like, is it in terms of the food that they get fed?
Well, the food is definitely gross. So right now I'm just finished my rotations with critical care patients. And I don't really have any say in the diet, but there's certain diet protocols that the dietitians kind of deal with. So you'll have like the cardiac diet, you know, the diabetes diet. But obviously, if you actually look at what they're eating, it's still some juice boxes. It's still, you know, yogurt with tons of sugar in it. It's just a bunch of processed foods, breads, things like that. That's definitely not going to make them feel better.
That sort of cardiac diet, that it's a cool phrase. I'm just trying to think right now. If I had to design like a hypothetical cardiac diet, I'm leaning towards like organ meats, like chicken hearts, like berries, probably I'd use like a hawthorn berry as like the, you know, the herbal extract. Mm-hmm. What else would you suggest in terms of like a cardiac, what would you do in a cardiac diet?
So this is actually going to bring this to my mom because she had a little bit of elevated cholesterol. I mean, her HDL, which is a good cholesterol, was not really high, right? And I kind of was like, okay, yeah, these don't really look very good. But I can tell why, because my mom's under a lot of stress all the time. She definitely eats a little bit too much bread, as Middle Easterns do. We love that bread and love those sweets. So my doctor actually put her on a low intensity statin, which is going to help lower the cholesterol. It's pretty much what you're given anytime that you have cholesterol issues. The doctor puts you on a statin, right? So I actually was able to wean her off of it, fixed all of her blood levels. I mean, all of her lipid levels look amazing now. The doctor was honestly shocked. But pretty much what I told her to eat was to make sure that she's eating 3 meals a day because my mom is a snacker, loves to snack on bread here and there, loves to snack on fruit here and there, but she doesn't really eat meals. So I made sure that she wasn't eating too many carbohydrates, I mean processed carbohydrates, because she loved to eat all of that all the time. I made sure that her breakfasts were pasture-raised eggs, you know, some avocado, some sautéed veggies in the morning, really making sure that she's getting those protein and fat in the morning. And then I kind of had her eat a normal lunch with some meat and veggies, you know, whole food starches, same thing for dinner, like kind of gave her those 3 big meals. And she's been really doing that consistently. Her HDL went through the roof. Her bad cholesterol went, you know, it's at normal levels now. So I'm just really happy that I kind of gave her some guidance, because I know that the doctors wanted her to go see a nutritionist and they kind of printed out a form, and it was still what we're taught in school. Tons of processed foods, milk, making sure she's getting her calcium with milk every morning. I mean, that's not the only way you can get calcium. I think we're all aware that calcium can come from vegetables, you know?
That's a good example of your implementation of food as medicine. And it's really rewarding, right, as a practitioner to see that happen in that sort of situation. Yeah. Was there any change to like exercise at all? Or?
Well, of course, but my mom is just, she does not like exercising, but we do have a treadmill. And if you know me, I am in between. On that treadmill all the time, as much as I can, getting in those walks. I know you have your little treadmill also. So I've been forcing my mom to kind of go on morning walks. She loves to watch her little Arab shows on her iPad. And so I told her, you know, you're just going to put that iPad on the treadmill and you're just going to walk. You're just going to aim for those 10K steps. She just has a health app on her phone. She doesn't have any fancy watches, obviously, but I really just making sure that she's walking. I've kind of showed her a few simple weights that she can do in terms of like bicep curls with the light 5-pound dumbbells that we have, things like that, as much as she can, but really just making sure she's getting enough movement throughout the day, because America as a society, we're very sedentary. I know this because with pharmacy school, all of our classes are on Zoom, and I made an effort at every hour when we had like 10 minute breaks to go on my treadmill, go for a 10 minute walk and sit back down. Like, it's really, really simple if you make the movement done throughout the day rather than just, you know, all at once, right? Mm. It's so much easier just get it here and there.
Mm. Yeah. You sort of mentioned in terms of the meal frequency you sort of prescribed. I was actually looking at a really crazy study the other week on nibbling versus gorging. And it was a comparison of 17 meals a day versus 17 mini meals a day versus 3 massive meals per day. And you will freak out. Like, I'm going to be doing a YouTube video soon on this topic, but in terms of the outcome, you'll freak out in terms of what the results are. I'm not going to reveal it here, but just keep a lookout because it's insane.
I'm thinking, like, how does someone even have time to eat 17 times a day?
It's like every hour, every waking hour. So as soon as you wake up, and last meals, I think are like 10 o'clock at night.
That's insane.
Yeah. Well, the findings were unreal, although it was a small study, like small population group, but it blew my mind. It just completely changes the way I think of snacking in general.
Yeah, I actually do like to snack here and there, but obviously, like, I think it's just more because I sometimes eat lunch at 12 in terms of class time or my rotations time, and I sometimes won't be able to eat dinner till 7. So I definitely need like a 3 to 4 p.m. snack, but I like to keep that 3 to 4 hour window in between just because I know that I'm not going to, I don't want my blood sugar to go all out of whack if I'm eating at every hour, you know? So I think snacks are okay. Also being mindful of what snacks you're eating. Pairing sometimes carbohydrate with the fat is really, really helpful with blood sugar control. So just keeping those things in mind is definitely something I try to be aware of.
Mm. Speaking of blood sugar control, one thing that I was really obsessed with at one stage was the CGM, continuous glucose monitoring devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sort of technology, I really hope to see just fully accessible to everyone. Like, to make it so strict right now in Australia for us to actually access one of those devices, first of all, you cannot buy one unless you're diabetic. And it's not even on, you can't even go on eBay or Amazon to buy one. It makes it so difficult. What's it like?
Wow. I'm pretty sure anyone can buy them. I actually was curious about it too. I'm just curious for my reasons, like after I eat a meal, what my glucose is. But yeah, I haven't bought one yet, but a lot of my friends have been asking me and they really want to try them. And I was like, I mean, go for it if you're interested. I definitely think that if you're someone who's a healthy individual, you know, maybe not, but I think for majority of America, we are not very healthy. So I think it could be good to really just understand your body, you know, is something that you're eating causing a blood sugar spike? Are you having blood sugar imbalance throughout the day? That's definitely an issue.
Something that comes to my mind is because it's a visual result, like, you know how you check your result on your phone, it's like, oh, I just spiked to like 9 or whatever, mm-hmm. or 150. Imagine if that sort of implemented technology where it would zap, like some sort of punishment system where you would get like a zap or something for your blood sugar being too high as like some sort of, I don't know, sort of therapy.
Like it zaps you?
Well, you get like, well, there needs to be some form of punishment. So like what would all that, you know, it's like a learned behavior. It's like, oops, I spiked too high. So it's like you get punished.
Yeah. Cause nothing beeps or anything, right? Or does it beep if it's too high?
It just shows like a exclamation mark, like a warning.
Interesting.
That's about it.
I definitely need some sort of...
I was going to say that that sort of data is so helpful, like just to see it visually. And you learn so much about foods that you thought were fine, that like, for example, sweet potatoes, I thought I'd respond okay to, but they, you know, really spiked and the blood sugar is quite high.
Really? So do you not eat them anymore? Do you was there another potatoes or anything that worked for you, or just potatoes in general?
In general, like I think, yeah, I'm just sensitive to starch. So I just try and avoid them now.
So. Wow. That's interesting. Hmm. I don't think I can avoid them.
Well, it was actually when I was playing soccer, when I was younger, that used to be my predominant carb source. I literally used to have boiled potatoes before soccer training pretty much all the time. And I'm wondering now, maybe what that theory of like doing anything in excess, eventually you become intolerant or allergic to. You heard of that?
Yeah. So that's kind of why I'm not really a fan of food sensitivity tests, because a lot of the stuff that are on there are probably something that you eat all the time. And it honestly rapidly changes. So I hate when people are like, I'm going to do a food sensitivity test and really see, you know, what I'm sensitive to and just eliminate it. Honestly, for me, I kind of did a slow elimination diet. I mean, I've done low FODMAP. I've done all these crazy things for my stomach. But honestly, doing an elimination diet and then reintroducing something in your body will really, really help determine if your body's actually sensitive to it. So for me, it was garlic, which is crazy because garlic has so many health benefits. It's so delicious. But honestly, anytime I eat that, I have weird brain fog. I'm bloated. You know, my stomach doesn't hurt. I have like this weird heartburn. I mean, I just don't feel like myself. My body just reacts so poorly. So I think doing them could just be helpful rather than paying $300 for a food sensitivity test that's going to change literally every time that you take it.
Mm. Somebody needs to urgently develop some sort of genius tracking software that like makes this process a lot easier, because like how hard is it for the everyday person to discover that garlic is bad for them? Like,
yeah, not a lot of people.
Well, I mean, like how many years were you consuming garlic, but you just didn't know?
Literally 22 years, 22 years. So 4 years ago, I really found out that I just couldn't do it anymore. Mm. And then onions, I'm kind of sensitive to, especially if it's raw. It has to be like caramelized for my body to really be able to digest it. But those two, gluten, of course, and dairy, I mean, those four things, like my body just cannot take.
Mm. And I think one of the stats for in terms of the top three food intolerances, I think, yeah, gluten was number one, number two was dairy, and I think number three was like egg yolks or egg
yolks. Yeah, I think it's actually the whites, that protein in it, which, I mean, if anyone's struggling out there with acne, I can go into all of this, but the three triggering foods for acne are gluten, dairy, and eggs. And I had some recent skin issues, and so I had to eliminate eggs, and I'm still eliminating them until my skin clears, because eggs are so healthy for you. I love eggs, and it's been a poor 6 months without them. So definitely going to slowly reintroduce those once my skin kind of calms down.
Let's dive into that sort of acne and skin issues. Like, yeah, talk us through maybe your journey and like what's helped you the most.
Yeah. So this is something crazy. So in February, March-ish, I really started having crazy breakouts, and specifically on my forehead. And I knew that kind of was digestion related, especially when it's on your hairline area and kind of, you know, by your ear, by your cheeks. So being the practitioner that I am, I work with various lab companies. And so I decided to order myself a comprehensive stool test. I knew that this had to be gut related. And the crazy thing is I had no gut symptoms. I've had a normal period, you know, since I've gotten my period back. I've been going to the bathroom daily. I don't have any weird chronic bloating, you know, symptoms I used to previously have. So I was like, you know what? Anytime you have skin issues, it's something internal. So it's really, really important that you are looking at your blood work and maybe doing a stool test if you are having chronic acne. So I did my stool test. I got my results. I didn't do it until about June or July because I kind of thought maybe it was eggs. Maybe I can change my skincare. Maybe, you know, because I wasn't having any weird symptoms but acne. So got my stool test results, and it showed that I had Citrobacter ferendi, which is basically a infectious bacteria that you normally get either if you have a UTI or you can get it from any kind of water source. Let's say you're swimming in the ocean, or let's say you're drinking water from Mexico, you know, that's not filtered, things like that. And so I also did some blood work with a naturopathic doctor, and we found out that my LDH, which is called lactic acid dehydrogenase, this is an enzyme in your body. And when it's really, really elevated, it means that there's some sort of organ or tissue damage going on. So with my stool test, we also found that my elastase levels were really low. It was almost to zero. And elastase is this enzyme. And when it is very, very low, it means you have some sort of pancreatic insufficiency. So correlating this all together, my pancreas wasn't working properly because of an infection. And it turns out that I was having, you know, digestive issues because my pancreas wasn't working properly. This infection went all the way to my pancreas and just has started damaging it for probably 9 months. I would say it was probably in there for at least 7 months in my body, which is really scary if you think about it, having an infection in your body and, you know, it slowly causes damage to that pancreas. And then in doing my blood work, my glucose level was 30. And when your glucose is that low, right, it wasn't fasted. So I want to put that out there. I had just eaten a meal and my glucose was 30. I mean, how was I not dizzy? How did I not faint or anything like that, especially after getting all that blood drawn? But it basically indicated to me that anything I was putting in my body, any sort of carbohydrates, I wasn't digesting. So a lot of my blood work pretty much showed me that my pancreas wasn't working properly, you know, and I wouldn't have found out that I had an infection without doing a stool test. So slowly getting my skin back to normal right now. I've actually am doing all of this holistically without any medications. So very exciting stuff.
And this was the CDSA test?
I did the doctor's data comprehensive stool test for 3 days because I wanted to do a 3-day test. The reason is candida overgrowth, which I thought I had candida overgrowth again. I don't know why, but I had a feeling maybe I had candida. I've been under a lot of stress lately. It usually happens when you're under a lot of stress. And so candida doesn't actually show up if you just do 1 day. Sometimes it takes 3 days to kind of see that you have yeast because it's really, really hard to actually find yeast in your stool. And so I just knew I wanted to do a 3-day stool test, but I do also love GI MAP. So I think those two are probably one of my favorite comprehensive stool tests. And the stool test tells you what natural antibiotics and what actual antibiotics you're resistant and susceptible to. So this is how I found out that I'm not sensitive to oregano and berberine, but the only antibiotic that worked for my body was grapefruit seed extract, which is amazing antimicrobial to take internally to clean your vegetables, things like that. So that is what I use to kind of kill my infection.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a very, this is the future of medicine, right? Like just precision, like targeted treatments based on not only your symptoms, but also objective data, like your results. And that low elastin sort of links in with what pancreatic exocrine function, is that right?
Yeah, so elastase, which is just an enzyme, and usually low levels are actually linked to pancreatic insufficiency and actually pancreas cancer. So it is important that your elastase levels are around above 200 or so, and mine were pretty much at zero. Which indicated to me that my pancreas wasn't working at all. So I wasn't making any digestive enzymes. And then I had this infection in me. So it was definitely scary, but it really helped me get to that root cause of my acne, right? Because any, you know, doctor or if I went to a doctor, for example, they probably would have told me to go on birth control because we learn that first line for acne is birth control or, you know, Accutane if you have severe acne or antibiotics. But antibiotics kill that good gut flora too. And we shouldn't be taking those chronically. And if they prescribe that to me, they probably would have had me on like a month or 3 month, 4 month, 6 month regimen of an antibiotic, which it definitely should not be the case.
As part of the recommendations, they mentioned grape seed extract, but did they also, because I know they wouldn't be fully against pharmaceuticals as well. So like, did they also recommend any pharma grade antibiotics?
In my stool test, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so your stool test shows you what actual antibiotics you're resistant or susceptible to as well. And they show you those antibiotics that are actually able to kill your bacteria. Mm. So they don't show you, you know, like there are hundreds of antibiotics. They don't show you all of them, right? But they show you the ones that are going to be able to kill that targeted bacteria. So even in terms of natural, like I said, but also normal antibiotics. And I found out, you know, I was resistant to amoxicillin and Augmentin. I used to have chronic ear infections as a child. I mean, I was on amoxicillin or Augmentin for years. And I think that is really what was kind of the root cause of all of my gut issues growing up, because my normal gut flora just probably didn't even exist.
Mm. And grapeseed extract is actually, I mean, we don't look at it from a really gut health perspective, but it just seems to have a potent antimicrobial action. We look at it more from like the you know, endothelial function, blood flow, UTIs, I think.
Yeah, so it's grapefruit seed extract.
Yeah.
So it's the seed of the grapefruit. And yeah, I mean, it's just been shown to be a very potent antimicrobial. So I did that 5 drops in my water morning and night for about 3 weeks. And I haven't retested if my infection is gone, but the protocol that I've been doing has definitely been clearing my skin. And I know my pancreas needs time. You know, my LDH was about 300, and a normal range for functional medicine is about 150 to 160. So, I mean, look at that, 150 it needs to go down, which is going to take some time because blood work levels don't just drop that drastically overnight. It's going to take a little bit of time.
Mm. I feel embarrassed that I don't remember the function of that LDH, the actual function outside of the scope of gut health. Like, doesn't it play a role in energy metabolism?
It does, actually, yeah. But a lot of times when it is really elevated, it just indicates that there's some sort of organ or tissue damage or cell damage going on in your body. So it's really an indicator for cell damage. That's pretty much what that lab value is used for. But yeah, it is an enzyme and it does help with energy and it does help with metabolism in your body as well. So,
right. Wow. So you gained quite a lot from, you know, that comprehensive stool analysis. You found out that you had low exocrine function. What other sort of digestive herbs are you using now, like as a maintenance?
Yeah. So for my infection, you mean?
Just in general.
Or just in general. Yeah. So I take L-glutamine every morning and I really just love that for the lining of your gut. I know that I've been taking that for probably about 4 years and I just love it. It's an amino acid, for those of you who don't know what L-glutamine is. So it definitely can be great. That's pretty much the main one, but I also do take a probiotic. So I'm not taking crazy things for my gut because the food that you eat is probably going to have the biggest impact to your gut health, and your stress levels are going to impact your gut health. The products that you're using is going to help with that gut health. So I think a lot of people really go to all these supplements and it kind of frustrates me a little bit because they think a supplement, it's basically like a pill, right? You think a supplement's going to fix you. But honestly, the food that you eat can play a huge role in your gut health. So really making sure that we're eating real whole foods, less of that processed foods, getting enough sleep, that's all going to be good for the gut.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Food is medicine, as we say.
Seriously.
It really is powerful. You mentioned, I want to look into like skin products and things like, and just all of these toxins that are found in so many shampoos, conditioners. Like, talk my audience through some of the implications and dangers associated with these products.
Yeah. So especially if you're having hormonal imbalance, let's look at your products. Cleaning products we use daily, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, face wash, makeup for the ladies, lotions, sunscreen, all of these things we're putting on our bodies, right? Our skin is our largest organ. So whatever you are putting on your skin is going directly into your body, directly into that systemic circulation. So when we are putting all these products on our body, think about, do you want to have that inside your body? Like, would you consume it? You know what I mean? So keep that in mind. But a lot of these endocrine disruptors and toxic products that contain parabens, sulfates, phthalates, all these things, there's thousands of ingredients that I would want people to avoid. But all of these things can actually mimic your natural hormonal production. And so if you're already having a hormonal imbalance, You know, they're probably disrupting your hormones even more, and they're going directly into your bloodstream. And studies have even shown that a lot of these ingredients have been linked to breast cancer, prostate cancer. I even saw a study on how patients who are pregnant, their children who were men had, you know, smaller prostates and a lot of hormonal imbalances because their mom used these toxic products on them. So there are studies out there. This is a real thing. Really be aware of what you are putting on your body because it's going to impact you long term. Like, right, you're probably not going to get cancer one time after using it. But think about when we start to see all these cancers. We see them 20, 30 years down the line. So what you are doing now is really going to impact you long term. Same thing with Alzheimer's. It's known as type 3 diabetes. I know I'm going off topic here, but a lot of this time, Alzheimer's starts when you're in your 20s because you really don't see this for 40, 50 years down the line. It's a progressive disease, but it's been shown to really start in your 20s. So take care of your health now, and you're going to have so many benefits in the future.
Well said. And the other aspect to that is the way they hide the ingredients on some of these cosmetic products in terms of like the word fragrance and things like that.
Yeah, fragrance. You got to avoid fragrance.
Yeah, and even with some of the things you mentioned around the Alzheimer's and things like that occurring early on, similar with Parkinson's, it's not until you reach a certain point in terms of dopamine degeneration that they get symptoms. From like a herbal medicine perspective, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what you would use from a cognitive health standpoint.
In terms of starting in your 20s, you mean, or do you mean like, let's say they have Alzheimer's at like 60?
Yeah, let's say the elderly population, like what would you lean towards?
So this is where I think the ketogenic diet can play a really, really important role. So originally this diet was actually made for patients who had epilepsy, right? It was for patients who had ADHD. So it does have some cognitive benefits. And so this is kind of where I would put a patient on possibly the ketogenic diet, but right, making sure that it's coming from good quality sources of fat, good quality sources of meat, eating real whole foods, but definitely going a little bit lower carb for those patients, just because we know the link, type 3 diabetes, Alzheimer's, right? We don't want to have that insulin resistance. So that's kind of what I would do in terms of that, specifically with their diet and stuff. As for supplements, I know you are like the brain master. I get all of my cognitive supplements and nootropic information from you. So I'm definitely not the person to ask in terms of supplements for them, but definitely with diet, 100%. I think that's kind of where a lower carb diet would benefit.
Cool. I actually saw a recent study on one of my favorite amino acids. You've probably heard me talk about it quite a lot, taurine. Actually, a human equivalent dosage of, I think it was 1.2 grams per day, which is not, it's not a lot, did have some anti-amyloid plaque inhibitory properties, which is awesome. Like, it's just another benefit of taurine potentially contributing to neuroprotection, things like that. So just another reason to love taurine.
Yeah, I know. I hear you talk about it all the time. No, maybe I'll look into that and try it sometime. You make me a little bit more adventurous with trying things because sometimes, you know, I like to do my research before I know you obviously do your research, but I definitely like am a little bit not as brave as you with trying all these things. So,
well, let's talk about your recent experiment with the 9-MBC, 9-methylbeta-carboline. Do you want to share with my listeners?
Yeah. So I really heard about nootropics from you and my other friend who's a huge fan of you as well. He's taken your nootropics class also. So it was really cool that, you know, I had two people telling me, go for it. A lot of cognitive benefits. I am not a big fan of Adderall. I'm just not a big fan of all that stuff in general, but I love that 9-MBC has a lot of cognitive benefits, right? There's so many health benefits rather than Adderall that's just gonna be a stimulator of your body. So yeah, I've recently taken it. It's been about a week or so of me kind of switching up days and taking it. And this morning, I actually just did not sleep well last night. I've had a little bit of anxiety the last couple of days, kind of had a big move. So makes a lot of sense for me. not sleeping so well, but I woke up with a lot of brain fog, and I just, you know, I was like, thank God I have 9-MeVC on hand. And I just took about 20, 25 milligrams of that. I've slowly been trying, you know, I went up from about 5 milligrams to 10 to really just to see that benefit that, or that amount that really is going to benefit me personally. But took it today and my brain fog instantly went away. I've had a lot of energy throughout the day. And I mean, it's definitely not something like Adderall where you feel this crazy, you know, high, but it's definitely like your brain can function so much better. I've never had so much focus. I've never had so much motivation, and I'm definitely going to keep that on hand when I'm having like one of those days where I just don't sleep enough, or I just need a little bit of an energy boost in terms of brain health.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love to hear it from people who've, you know, talked me through their day and their actual experience with it. Cause all I hear is like crazy nerds talking about different pathways and things like that. But to actually hear it from someone who's integrating it into their, you know, day-to-day routine is really cool. Mm-hmm. One sort of theory I had around it was like to use 9-MBC on Sundays. So I call it 9-MBC Sundays. Cause like, you know, Friday night you go out, maybe Saturday night you get, I guess, wasted for some people. And then Sundays are like the recovery day. So maybe that's where 9-MBC will come in hand.
I mean, I'm going to be traveling a little bit, so I'm definitely bringing it with me in case I don't get enough sleep and I need that energy. So it's definitely not something that I'm going to be using every single day, but I think it could be really, really good to have on hand when, you know, you don't want to have a lot of caffeine, because obviously if you have hormonal issues, really limiting caffeine. I know you don't really drink caffeine, but it's definitely something that acts like caffeine, but also just makes your brain feel so much better. You don't feel jittery. It's not going to disrupt your hormones. So highly recommend for people listening to look into some of that.
How'd you go with the flavor, the taste?
It is so disgusting. And I was warned by my friend, like, just beware, it tastes really, really bad. And I was like, I can handle it. Like, glutathione, you've tried pure glutathione. It's nasty. Like, I have tried many things. I'm like, you know, I'll be okay. I kid you not, like, I make the worst face whenever I take that. And I actually had my little brother try it too. So we were moving out of my apartment. He was so exhausted. And he was like, Christina, like, I'm so tired. I was like, I have a nootropic. We're going to have you try it. He literally felt like a new person, but the face he made when he took it, it's disgusting. It tastes like a medicine. Like, I can't really explain what it tastes like, but it just tastes like, I don't know. If you see my face right now, it just looks, that's what it tastes like.
Well, you know, part of the actual molecule itself, it's from the same family, the beta carboline family, same family as the ayahuasca brew. I've never used ayahuasca, but I've heard a lot of things about it in terms of its amazing spiritual awakening properties, mm-hmm. things like that. But have you heard what people say about that brew in terms of how that tastes?
No.
People have said that that is the most revolting tasting thing in the world. And so it makes sense that this 9-MBC has a similar flavor profile. It's almost like bitter with like a really weird sour.
Yeah, like bitter and sour and like, oh, and just it leaves a really bad aftertaste. So I always make sure that I'm drinking my like lemon, apple cider vinegar, salt water. I do that every morning, but I make sure I drink that with it, like right after, because the apple cider vinegar really kills the taste. Or you probably need to eat something with it, is all I'm going to say. It's just disgusting.
Yeah. For those listening and you want to learn more about that, I do have an awesome YouTube video breaking down the mechanisms around that. So I'll link those in the show notes. But was there anything else, Christina, you wanted to dive into or explore? You think we've sort of left unexplored at all? Or
no, I think that was it. We got off topic. We talked a lot. And I know I've had a crazy amount of experiences to share. So I really appreciate you letting me come on the show.
Yeah, awesome. So for those listening in, where can they find you, Christina, your social media platforms and things like that?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram. My website is coming up soon, but you can find me on Instagram at Chrissy T with an underscore PharmD. It's Chrissy with a K. So I hope to see some of you guys on my feed or on my Instagram sometime.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.
Thank you everyone for joining in to today's episode. For in-depth show notes and lessons learned, visit nofilter.media/boostyourbiology.
This has been a No Filter Media production.
Say what you want.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.